connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for web.
Computer today.
Computer.
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 NetSurfer Pro.
I submit to the approval of the 0 o'clock AM club, the man who says his name backwards. Once there was a man who said his name backwards, and whenever someone would hear it, it would be really weird, because the guy would say it backwards. You're looking at me funny?
Yeah, sorry, we're, us and the rest of the members of the 0 o'clock AM, club, we're kinda, you know, looking at this one, and, you know, didn't you tell us yesterday, the story of, the man whose name was the same way forward as it was backwards?
Well, yeah, but this is different.
And the man who, every time he said his name, he would walk backwards?
Okay, yeah, but that was a more visual affair.
There was also the man who was backwards, and I don't even know how that one worked after you told us the story.
Well, that's because I told it to you backwards. It was a puzzle story.
Okay.
I see my genius is lost on you. I'm going to leave now.
Yeah, well, alright. So that one's clearly a wash. Next up for the possible inductees into the 0 o'clock AM club is Mr. Apparition.
Ah, yes. Yes, I have come to submit my story to the 0 o'clock AM club. Yes, very good, yes.
Now,
This is one of my greatest creations.
Okay, of course. Mr. Apparition, or could we call you Wario?
Yes, you may call me Wario Garlic Emporium Incorporated Apparition. That's my full name, yes.
You know, I think I'll just stick with Mr. Apparition then. So it says you have a story here to tell the 0 o'clock AM Society?
Yes.
Possible for approval?
Of course, yes. I submit to the 0 o'clock AM Society, the ghost with the yellow hat. Once, there was a video game convention, where everyone played the greatest video games, but they did not have Wario Incorporated. Yeah, WarioWare, I mean. Didn't have the LLC filed yet.
Okay.
Hold on, you're looking at me weird?
Yes, I'm sorry. It's just, oh man, this is so embarrassing. You know, there was a guy before the backwards person who told the story of the red-hatted apparition that was very realistic.
What?
Yeah, this is, oh man, oh geez, this is really embarrassing. And we've actually already approved them. If you'd like to say hi, hyper-realistic Mario.
Hello!
Yeah, this is, oh gosh, oh geez, this is so embarrassing. You know, you've came all the way here, and, you know, I don't want to have stolen your thunder, but we do already have one, hatted, apparition character on us.
Fine, then. I'll have to take my stories elsewhere. You're missing out on $1 million investment, you know.
Yeah, unfortunately, the 0 o'clock AM Society is, more of like a worker-owned co-op thing.
I thought it was a club.
Well, you know, it's a club and a society.
We live in a society.
Yeah, the saying, I believe, goes, you either die a club or you live long enough to see yourself become a society. So, yeah, ah, oh, geez, I'm really sorry, Mr. Apparition.
I just made it here in time. Sorry.
Oh, hey! Thank God, Matthew. Oh, you're here.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I was held up getting some food on the way here. You won't believe what happened to me at Burger King.
Oh, man. Yeah.
That's not my story, though. I submit to the approval of the 0 o'clock AM Club, NetSurfer Pro.
A whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web?
Oh, so you've heard.
Ah, yes.
So you clearly know the co-host, Matt.
Yes, and the co-host, Galen. Actually, I believe that Matt was the main host.
The go-host.
The go-host. Oh.
Oh, wait, no, that was the spoiler for the third episode of Spooky Month.
Dang.
Yeah, so you're listening to this podcast, and we are, of course, right at the start of the spooky month of October, the only month where you are legally allowed to talk about horror movies and horror stuff.
Yes.
Otherwise, you do it illegally, which is cool.
Yeah. And it's super cool to do it illegally.
You know, the reason why there's so many, like, queer people who are into horror media is because, of course, they are being gay and doing crimes.
Yes, yes. If you have watched anything vaguely horror-related, if you watch Coraline in November, that is still illegal and thus awesome.
Yeah. The only thing that gets a pass is Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yes, and that's because of a legal technicality. There was a whole court case about it. We'll do another episode about this, clearly. But yes, Spooky Month is upon us. We can now legally vent our interests.
Yeah, vent?
Vent. That was the word that I decided to go with.
That's pretty suspicious, if you ask me.
I know.
Yeah, so we've got a bit of a...
Shh! Don't spoil the twist for episode two.
Oh, damn. So we've got a bit of a fun topic here. So last year for Spooky Month, we talked about creepypastas and creepy video game web horror.
Yes.
And our topic for today is sort of a follow-up to that, in a way.
You could call it a spiritual successor.
Nice. Nice. I like that. I like that. Yeah. So first of all, I want to talk a bit about just sort of the creepypasta renaissance.
Yeah.
So, I think I've heard a lot of people say this kind of started with Pets Cop, and I don't really know if I agree necessarily. I think Five Nights at Freddy's brought back creepypastas.
Yeah, yeah. Five Nights at Freddy's... So, Five Nights at Freddy's spawned the sort of theory culture of sort of the modern day. And I think that you can't talk about the modern creepypasta renaissance without talking about that as well, which is why we're briefly mentioning it. But, like, the sort of, like, you know, theory culture of, like, what's the real story is sort of inexorably tied with the creepypasta renaissance.
Right. So, to get you caught up, creepypastas are spooky stories on the internet. That's pretty much it. It comes from creepy and copypasta, a copypasta being a passage that would be copy and pasted around message boards. And the original wave of creepypasta mainly started on the X board of 4chan and included things like Slenderman, Jeff the Killer, and then there were a lot of video game related ones like Lavender Town Syndrome, Sonic EXE,
famously
Ben Drowned, which we did an episode on. Or a two-part episode, I think.
We did multiple episodes.
Yeah. And then one of the famous offshoots of that was SCP Foundation, which kind of got to be its own sort of thing. Its own wave. Its own genre.
Yeah, yeah. SCP-style fiction. SCP-style fiction, I think, like, gets into things like the Backrooms, you know?
Yeah,
like,
well, so it's funny you mentioned that. Backrooms literally was a green text.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So here's the thing, is that there was a lull in creepypastas as a whole. It was, like, around the time that Ben Drowned stopped and was put on hiatus.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it was just that a lot of kids were getting into creepypastas. And, you know, there's tons of people who have talked about how kids latch on to certain forms of horror at a young age. And a lot of kids' horror is, like, a thing. I'd see, like, Jeff the Killer and Slenderman and Roblox, you know?
Yeah.
I think that was sort of deemed too cringe, and then creepypastas were too cringe. And then I think it was a mix of, A, people are now coming back around on cringe as a whole. We are sort of in a post-cringe world. B, the kids that were into that thing are growing up and doing their own, like, YouTube channels and making their own art. And C, Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yes.
Which, as I said, sort of said, was, like, that kind of brought kids' horror back into the spotlight. It really took what was memeable about things like Slenderman and cranked it up to 11 in, like, the Slender video game. And, it got a whole lot of other people interested in this thing, and a lot of people also saw money in the amount of clicks it could give you.
Yes, that's how we get things like, I don't know, Poppy's Playtimes, Bendy and the Ink Machine. We're not going to get into those.
Yeah.
But, at the very least, not this spooky month.
Right, but that led to Pets Cop, which was a sort of web series, web fiction, creepy stuff around a haunted, quote-unquote, maybe not haunted, PS1 game.
Yes.
And since then, there's been a resurgence in creepypasta as a medium. As you said, the Backrooms literally was a green text, and that has sort of been its own thing with its own mythos.
Yeah, liminal horror is kind of its own, like, branch of web horror nowadays.
Yeah. And as we were talking about, the idea of, like, a creepypasta monster, a thing that will kill you or be spooky, still is alive and well. And
ironically.
Yes. And so that's the first element of the, like, Powerpuff Girl soup that we're making here. Then the spice is low-poly horror.
Yes, low-poly horror I would say, honestly, in, like, we're in peak low-poly horror right now.
Yeah.
I think we're, like, kind of past the peak a little bit. We're kind of winding down a little bit. I think people are getting tired of every itch.io horror game being a low-poly horror thing. But I don't want that to sound like I'm knocking it. I love low-poly horror. I want to specifically, like, shout out Kitty Horror Show does not do, like, specific PS1 horror-style things. But, there's a lot of inspiration in the games that she has made of low-poly aesthetics and horror. And also Puppet Combo, rather famously. I don't know if I can necessarily say famous. I know that, like, a lot of streamers have played their games, a lot of, like, high-profile YouTubers have played their games, but I don't know if I could say, like, oh, they're big now. But,
yeah, they're notable in the scene.
Yes. They really latched onto the PS1 style thing and made a lot of, like, 80s slasher-inspired low-poly horror games. And then, of course, we have the PS1 demo disc. The haunted PS1 demo disc.
I also want to shout out Arcane Kids, who did Bubsy Visits the James Turrell Retrospective and Sonic Dreams Collection.
Yes.
Where those weren't as much about the PS1 style of, like, what's it called? Like, dithering and sort of distortion almost and mist and stuff like that, as they were about just low poly aesthetics and mimicking low poly games.
Yeah.
And I also want to shout out Dustin Bragg, who was the director of Yonoid 2 Enter the Void, and now The Big Catch.
Nice.
Which is coming out, hopefully. I backed it already on Kickstarter. But Yonoid 2 Enter the Void was not necessarily a creepy game. It was a parody of Yonoid, and it was like this whole 3D platformer with nifty mechanics. It had a grapple hook.
Yeah. But it was a throwback.
It had the atmosphere, though. It had, like, this weird sort of, it felt like there was a shoe waiting to drop.
Yeah.
What these all sort of draw inspiration from is, like, Silent Hill and Resident Evil. The horror game genre didn't start on the PS1. It started on, like, the PC-98 and PC Engine line of computers with visual novels and such. But the horror game genre, as it was in the West, was popularized on the PS1.
Yeah. Survival horror specifically is generally what is considered, like, Resident Evil and Silent Hill to have spawned, essentially, is the survival horror genre. But even the more broad sort of, like, stylizations of them, of using the PS1 limitations to the advantage of, you know, like, high tight fog and, like, weird, you know, low poly models that imply something more horrifying,
right?
That definitely, like, started with them.
Yeah. From what I understand, the way that the PS1 renders vertexes is, like, really weird. It does the thing where it draws them as pixels, from what I understand, but, like, the actual pixel content of the line varies a lot depending on your perspective. Don't quote me on this, I'm not a graphic engineer, but I believe that's why, like, straight lines look wobbly on the PS1.
Yeah, you're not a graphic engineer, you're more of a modest engineer.
True.
You would, like, hit your hand with a hammer and you'd be like, ah, son of a biscuit.
Well, yeah, so PS1 Demo Disc is a sort of annual collection of short horror game demos and, like, one-offs that are all sort of organized around usually some sort of hub. Previously, it was just like a menu that you use to play these games, when in recent times, the hub itself has been its own mini game with, like, collecting items to open up different doorways. And not every game in the Haunted Demo Disc collection is PS1 in particular, but it's sort of the main, like, flagship of the movement as a whole.
Yeah. I know a number of games in the PS1 demo disc are also specifically meant to become full games later down the line. I know some of them have, in fact.
Yeah, like Peeb 3D, which has the boner button.
Boner.
Boner. So yeah, I also view it as a natural extension of the pixel art renaissance.
Yeah.
You know, in the 2000s into 2010s, there was a huge pixel art renaissance, and currently, you know, there's still tons of indie games that use sprites in pixel art as an aesthetic, but I think now, as the sort of nostalgia wave has passed forward, now people are nostalgic for those low-poly models of the generation of consoles of, like, the PS1 and Nintendo 64, which is why we're seeing so many low-poly games in general.
Yes.
And the current, like, era of horror fits really well into that. You know, horror indie games post FNAF, post Bendy, post Spooky's House of Jump Scares,
which is another one to shout out as well. Yeah.
And obviously post Petscop, all sort of work really well with this graphical style.
Yeah.
Oh, also shout out to PSX Lilith. It's not really a horror game, but she's the one who did the Bloodborne remake.
Yes.
And she also is doing Bloodborne Cart.
Yes.
Just, yeah, shoutouts to PS1, PSX Lilith.
This is only tangentially related, but also shoutouts to Autumn Ivy, who seems to be the voice actress that people go to for these styles of games, and that's fucking awesome, because Autumn Ivy is great. I love Autumn Ivy. Autumn Ivy, if you ever want to be a guest on our show, please don't. I will be starstruck.
I won't. That's sort of the current era of low-poly horror. Did you have anything else to add to that?
I do. The only thing I would specifically add is I don't know how long it is going to continue to be the current mood, essentially. There are going to be people who still do it in the same way that we have people who still do pixel art, of course. But, like, I think as the nostalgia circuit kind of keeps moving forward a bit, and we get to, like, the you know, the PS2 and GameCube era, yeah, being the sort of, like, big nostalgia thing. We're already seeing this with, you know, like A Hat in Time or
I give it like 3 or 4 years of like this style of horror, and then there's going to be like one or two big games that are based specifically off RE4 or Eternal Darkness.
Yeah.
That will then, or Silent Hill 3, that will then like become big.
Yeah. Yeah, which I am personally even more excited for, I will say.
Mm-hmm.
I love low-poly horror. I love it, love it, love it. I do not care how saturated the market gets, but I will say I am even more excited for, like, the GameCube and PS2 era horror revival that is just, like, just around the corner.
Yeah. So, that's the spice. And then the everything nice is Mario 64... Iceberg.
Yes.
So Iceberg videos, they were kind of a flash in the pan. You still see people make them, and there are still people whose channels are kind of built around them, but they aren't as big as they were before. The iceberg is essentially, you know, the tip of the iceberg. The phrase and the concept of knowing the tip of the iceberg.
Yes.
The further you go down the iceberg, the less you know about the subject. First, I believe this was used to represent things that, I've seen it a lot early on for, like, music tastes or, like, YouTubers or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, you know, the top one is, like, Panic at the Disco, Taylor Swift. And then you go down and down and down, and towards the bottom, it's things like Far Side Virtual and, like, Godspeed You, Black Emperor, In Sun... Circles, smiley, whatever sun is. And then at the very bottom, it's giraffes.
Is that the giraffes deck?
Yes. You said that last time I brought up giraffes.
It's my catchphrase now.
And then below that is my uncle on SoundCloud. Yeah. But then people started doing it to refer to sort of topics and fun facts and trivia about things.
Yes.
So, like, the lost iceberg might include, like, at the very top, it's the island is the afterlife, and then it's like the numbers 4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42, and at the bottom it's like Rosicrucianism.
I as someone who did not watch Lost, have no context for any of this. I do know the numbers, of course.
Yeah. Essentially, it's that the lower you go, the weirder it gets and the more offbeat it gets and the more complex the descriptions are.
Yeah. And this sort of naturally lends itself to horror, I think.
Yeah.
Because, like,
Hold on. I just have to remember, my favorite iceberg is the Magic the Gathering rules iceberg.
Oh, yeah.
Where, like, the bottom layer has things like casting Panglacial Worm while activating Salvala. Heart of the Wild, is it? The mono green Salvala? Or, it has the great things like casting Brainstorm in your upkeep after Sylvan Library. Or no, it's casting Brainstorm in response to Sylvan Library's triggers. Stuff like that. Really funny. Really funny things you should do in a competitive environment.
Yeah. If there's one thing we can influence you to do, it's you should play competitive Magic the Gathering, and you should play it terribly. You should go flood the market. Everyone go sign up to tournaments. Make it as miserable as possible.
Okay, so here's what you do. First, you play your copy of Opalescence, and then you play your copy of Humility. And then you return those to your hand, you play your copy of Humility, and then you play your copy of Opalescence.
So, icebergs.
Yeah, so... one of the most famous icebergs was the Mario 64 iceberg.
I would argue that the Mario 64 iceberg essentially kind of created the language of icebergs as they exist today.
Yeah, I see so many references to it in other icebergs, especially the do not research.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, the first layer is like there are 120 stars. The Lakitu is the camera, and then going down, it's some things like L is real and other like popular things like that.
Yeah.
Cold crevasse.
Yeah. The space world demo.
Quiet. No running in the halls. And then you go down and there's wet, dry world, negative emotional aura, which is just that wet, dry world is kind of eerie and depressing. Especially the weird little low-poly city in there, which I can kind of understand. And then there's the every copy of Mario 64 is personalized.
Which I just... Oh, man. I have some opinions.
And here we go to the main subject. Yes. Mario 64 creepypastas in the year of our Lord 2019 through 2022.
Yes. This is, I'm going to call, the personalization era of Mario 64 creepypastas, because that's kind of the tying force. Even when it's not exactly the tying force, it's sort of, this is the era we're in.
Yeah, so this actually was also originally a green text.
Ah, yes, I do remember this, actually. Mm-hmm. The green text was essentially positing that the reason that we have childhood stories like, so a non-Mario's example of like, oh yeah, I used strength on the truck to find Mew. Those types of stories, those types of like childhood playground rumors, it posits that the reason we have those for Mario 64, like your L is real, like your, you know, I went into the painting at the back past Lethal Lava Land, that sort of thing, is not necessarily just because kids are liars or kids misremember things, but because every copy of Mario 64 comes with a personalization AI.
That's not actually what the original one said.
That's not actually the original one?
The original one just said, have you ever played Mario 64 at a friend's house and it felt kind of off? Like, it's not the same one that you played? That's because every copy of Mario 64 is personalized to make it a little different for each player.
That's so much worse, and that makes me dislike it even more.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah, so the original thing was more so like, does it feel uncomfortable playing another person's copy of Mario 64? And I guess, I never really felt that way, but I guess enough people did that they were like, oh, I get it. It is a, it uses sort of leading questions.
Yeah.
You know, like, sure, I don't feel that way, but if you're asking about it like that, then maybe somebody else does.
Yeah.
It It reminds me a lot of Lavender Town Syndrome, where it's like, I never felt headaches from the Lavender Town music, but maybe some people did.
Yeah. And I will say, I played my friend's copy of Kingdom Hearts 2 for over a weekend, and did not get any creepy vibes from it. No spooky piglet heads or anything.
No, see, that's the thing, is that Kingdom Hearts 2 is only creepy when you own the copy.
Ah, gotcha.
But yeah, and then it did get taken sort of further and developed further in a very communal fashion into what you were describing.
Yes.
The sort of running theme was that there was this AI of some sort that would modify the game as you played it, which is kind of a neat idea.
Yeah, it's... So, like, on the face of it, it's, you know... If the prompt is, what if kids' memories were not bad? What if they just had... They just literally had a different copy. That's kind of a fun idea. And it's kind of a fun little explanation of like, yeah, clearly you didn't have, freeze world or whatever. Clearly you didn't have freeze easy peek in Mario. Because your copy was personalized to not have that because you don't like ice levels.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, it's a cute little idea. And then... We have the creepypasta aspect of, like, okay, we have this base idea, you know? We have this baseline idea of there's a personalization AI that makes every copy of Mario 64 just a little different. What if it made things just a little different and just a little fucked up?
Yeah. The works that sort of spawned from this all kind of had the same baseline assumption, or baseline, I don't know, like, it was made with the idea that the AI would make things weird and creepy, and it would always sort of spiral downward like that.
Yeah.
And this appears in sort of a few different works that we've specifically chosen to highlight, but I really quick want to bring up two things about this. As we sort of alluded to, Mario 64 had a lot of playground rumors, like L is real, or, you know... being able to play as other characters. I also think it's really funny that Mario 64 DS, upon having Luigi, had its own Waluigi is real rumor.
Yeah.
I still think that's great. Check out the Big Yellow video about it. So there were like a lot of rumors and such about Mario 64 as a whole. But there are two very interesting bits about the game. One is that Mario 64 was decompiled in, I want to say, 2019 or 2020, meaning that the code was recreated as it originally was. Normally, when you make something like a game, you program it in your programming language, and then a compiler turns that code into baseline machine code for the machine to run.
Yeah.
A decompile is to turn it backwards from machine code into regular code, which is very hard to do. This has led to a huge resurgence in a huge gained interest in ROM hacking. People are able to inject their own mechanics and code way easier because they can write it in something like C++ or JavaScript and then compile that into the game alongside the rest of the code. You don't have to code in assembly, which is very hard to do if you're not Chris Sawyer.
It's the equivalent of, and I'm sitting here trying to think of a good metaphor.
It's the equivalent of camcorders.
Okay.
Hear me out.
Justify yourself. I'll sit here.
Camcorders allowed for home movies to be a thing because it made the actual, like, technology behind film cameras accessible to people.
Okay.
You're not necessarily... It's like Be Kind Rewind. You know, yeah. they film over the movie.
Yes, because okay.
They're able to get the technology to do so.
So I was going to use an analogy of like, I'm going to say a car.
Okay.
In the, so ROM hacking existed, but ROM hacking before it was fully decompiled was like tinkering with a car, adding things to the engine, taking things out of the engine, what have you. Decompiling is like we now have the entire manual and could like literally build a new car using the parts.
Yeah, sure. So that made it a lot easier to add these like weird effects and stuff into the game, along with just better tools being implemented for adding things like models and AI NPCs and whatnot. But also, Mario 64 is particularly interesting, and this is sort of a postulation as to why people are making so many content around this game in particular.
Yes.
Mario 64 is the game with the least fourth wall remaining. So essentially every part of Mario 64 has been deconstructed completely by fans. You obviously have the decomp, as mentioned. There's also people like Panin who have examined mechanics inside and out to know exactly how they work, like how walls work, how slopes work, how coins work, how Goombas work.
How blinking works.
How blinking works, yes. How,
like, there's also, I mean, like, how RNG works and, like, the specific cycle that RNG goes on.
Mm-hmm. How butterflies and fish work. Yeah. Then you also have things like how people are sort of trying to reverse find all of the textures in the game and find, like, the high-quality versions, the HD originals. I think this was briefly mentioned in Kid Leave Stoop's most overused game graphic texture. Another big one that is commonly referenced is the wet-dry world skybox. How people have found the exact picture of the city present in wet-dry world skybox in, like, the filters they use to edit it. So people have recreated an HD version of that skybox.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, Not only is the game itself decompiled, we kind of have, like, more than a couple of, like, bits of the, like, the story of the developers themselves making it, essentially,
mm-hmm.
is the way that I'm going to phrase it. Where it's, like, we don't just know, like, the end result of the game. We also basically have, like, a lot of, you know, through decompiling and stuff, not just through, like, interviews and stuff, we have a lot of, like, the story of why developers made certain decisions that they did, and those that we don't have answers for, we're generally kind of seeking answers for.
Right. And there was also the 2020 Nintendo leak.
Yes.
There was a big leak, a ton of Nintendo stuff got leaked. It's how we learned about the precursor to Yoshi's Island. That had, like, this weird ant guy. He's not a Minecraft YouTuber. but some of the things were, like, early Mario 64 builds that included early, like, beta levels, like the eponymous Funhouse.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said eponymous. Notorious Funhouse.
I believe it also included some like, early concept models for Luigi. Yeah. Because one of the big reveals was that 24 years and 1 month after Mario 64 came out, L was, in fact, real.
Yeah.
The 2020 leak was... So, from my understanding, there was sensitive information in the leak that probably should not have been leaked. And that's probably no good. And leaking in general is sort of, like, a little more morally dubious than other things, but at the very least, looking at the end result of decisions that Nintendo has made and code that Nintendo has made for these games that are really, really long-standing and classic, and we now have even more information about them, it's really, really interesting.
Yeah, the history behind these games that are, like, literally, like, world-defining, like, they've literally changed the world.
Yeah.
In some ways, is very, very historically valuable, very culturally valuable, and pretty neat.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are all sort of other factors contributing to the specific fervor around this specific game. And now, I guess we're going to go into three sort of video series about Mario 64 personalization.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, there is one more thing to talk about, which is the Wario apparition.
Yes,
which was that
yes.
There was an E3 where they had Charles Martinet hooked up to a face rig, sort of.
Yes.
The facial capture.
This facial capture is famous in Mario Teaches Typing 2 because there's the specific Mario face capture that, like, talks to you and is like, I know you're going to be a great typist. That was pretty... That saw a lot of use in the YouTube poop scene.
Yeah.
Because it was a really good source.
Yeah, and similar technology was used for the Donkey Kong Country TV show.
Yes. But
for this E3, he was hooked up to a Wario face, because I believe this was promoting Wario Land.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like Wario would show up and be like, "You like this video game? Well, I'll show you a better one. You want fun? Wario give you fun."
Yeah.
And for some reason, people thought this was creepy enough to put into these creepypastas.
Yeah.
So the Wario apparition became its own sort of monster. It's not really related to that every copy is personalized. I guess the idea is just that Wario wants to kill Mario, but for real this time?
It's, okay, we're going to get into the Wario apparition a bit. We have one sort of main topic here, but we have a couple of side topics which are sort of the creepypastas of it. And the side topics are going to be a little more my domain here.
Yeah.
The briefest one of these we're going to mention is the SM64 Beta Archives. This was a YouTube channel that was I think it was slightly before the personalization stuff. It was definitely more in vain of the leaks. And the ideas present were essentially like, it was sort of making things a bit creepy by association. One of the more famous things is like an animation showcase that mentions like, oh, these were mocapped off of real people. And, you know, it shows, you know, like, Mario does a run and like Bowser does a stomp. And then there's one where it stays uncomfortably long on the Mario drowning animation. And it just kind of like stays on it. And you watch it and you sort of remember like, this is mocapped, right?
Yeah.
And
then there's later on, there's like a music test showcase where the picture is just Mario standing in the water.
Yeah. Mario is standing in the water. Water is a big theme of the thing, and like drowning as well. It is unfortunately the one I have the least to say about, because while I think it was quite good, and it actually like had pretty good potential, the creator, or at the very least the person who was running it, because there were multiple people contributing to it.
The director.
Yeah, the director was apparently a piece of work, and according to it, kind of had a big falling out between the people who were creating the actual sort of content for the videos and the director who was directing it. It kind of dissolved, as it probably should have,
mm-hmm.
because don't work for people who are shitty. But it is kind of sad that it is sad that the director was a piece of shit. Because it seemed like it had pretty good legs.
Yeah, there was an ARG part of it as well, of like files that you needed passwords to open.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of neat ideas, and it's sad to see the story wasn't finished, but, you know, for good reason. I will say it has something really funny, which is that all the characters are American. Not American, they're British. The characters are British.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a running theme in a lot of Mario 64 creepypasta stuff, is that they can't possibly imagine a Japanese person. So all the main characters are British that just happen to be working on Mario 64.
Oh, don't worry, not all of them. The next one actually has an American.
Oh, nice. Yeah, they're British or American working for Nintendo to make this new video game.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that always gets me a little bit, because like, I understand, work with what you have, and like, it's not like there weren't American and British people working on the game, but like, if the idea is the beta build and like the earliest stuff, that stuff's obviously going to be Japanese.
It's a thing of like, it seems like they wanted to make the creepypasta and all the videos and stuff, but they didn't have any Japanese speakers or know any Japanese speakers.
Yeah.
And they obviously didn't want to use Google Translate, because you shouldn't use Google Translate for your work.
Yes.
So they just went with the next thing, which was to justify it in lore. Only sort of diagonally, though.
Yeah, yeah. I can't wait for the Alan Please Add Details creepypasta.
Yeah.
Where it turns out he's Ethiopian for some reason.
Wait, hold on. Was Alan Resnick the Alan who needed to add details?
Oh my god, we've cracked the case here at the 0 o'clock AM Club.
Good work, 47.
So yeah, the second one we're going to be talking about a little less briefly is the... So I believe the title is Super Mario 64 Classified. It's the Greenio series based off the idea of the 1995 build and an ARG sort of surrounding it.
Yeah, something you'll see a lot is the Space World 95 build. Space World is the precursor to the Tokyo Game Show. It was the sort of the main video game show at the time.
Yeah.
And there was footage of a build or of a beta build from this show, and people have been sort of hounding for it and searching for it since. And I believe some of that was in the 2020 leak.
Yeah. So the Greenio series, no shade at Greenio. Do not know Greenio. I'm about to say some criticism of this series, but I'm also going to say some positive things. Just want to make it perfectly clear. This is not like, you know, oh, Disney did a terrible thing. This is just like, hey, a creator made something. I have comments. So with that out of the way, I don't like this series.
Okay. This is really funny because he showed me like 10 minutes or 15 minutes of this series before recording.
Yeah. Okay. So here's, I think, my main criticism. The crux of the series is that the various characters, Mario, Luigi, Peach, I believe also Wario, the Wario apparition is in it, probably also Bowser, are all like AIs that were created to make the game as, you know, lifelike and realistic as possible. It's sort of, you know, it's similar to like your sort of FNAF inspired things of like, we're going to use real artificial people to make things as lively as possible. Your Harmony and Horror. I believe in the fiction, they are not like children's souls or anything. I believe it is just AI that were created for this. But in being created for it, they are now, you know, like in torment essentially, and the series kind of follows the person who sort of like kicked off this torment accidentally, and his attempts to like his somewhat fruitless attempts to like rein it in and like free them of their torment. And I guess the core of this is just, so famously, when I talked about the Tri-Rite Archives, I said, I don't give a crap about dead kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't give a crap about AI either.
Wow, you hate so many people.
I know. Like, here's the thing.
You play Soma all the way through and you're like, okay?
Every time I watch a new Black Mirror episode, I'm just like, who cares? It's technology. Wait, hit the power button.
Wouldn't it be kind of funny, mate, if playing Mario 64 and some of the characters, like Luigi, came to life? Wouldn't it be kind of weird, mate?
Wouldn't that be fucked up, mate?
Wouldn't that be a little fucked up, mate?
So here's the thing. I think that the game, I think that this series, again, I don't want this to be fully negative. I think the series does do a lot of interesting things with the premise, barring the idea of, but like barring the whole like an American and a British person working on this series, like working on these pre-release things.
An American and a British person walk into a bar, and the bartender says, "Welcome to Mario 64. Thank you so much for playing my game."
And then the American goes, "Oh wait, hang on. There's drinking in this game. This is gonna make this rated E. This is gonna make this rated M." And so, like, I think it does do interesting things with the format. The video that I specifically showed Matthew shows like a promo reel of like Luigi showing gameplay as though it's like this, you know, like this thing that's supposed to be interjected, or like a VHS tape that goes out as promos. And you know, it shows Luigi going through things as normal, and then things get a little scarier and a little scarier. But the crux of it is that Luigi ultimately, like, has to go down in a really, really deep water place.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, you see Luigi pick up coins every now and again, but, like, it's pretty clear there really doesn't seem to be an ending to this. And eventually you see the life counter tick down and tick down and tick down, and eventually he drowns. And then it cuts to, like, a scary Mario face. And then at the very end, as kind of a really funny bit, that I don't know if it was necessarily intentionally funny, but it shows the, like, the famous Ella's Real statue sort of, like, spawning into place in the courtyards as if it is, in fact, his gravestone. And I like this idea. I like this idea of recontextualizing things. I like this idea of, like, using the game mechanics themselves to tell this story. However, I am a little bit sick of, like, real, like, oh, real people are trapped in the video game, or, like, real consciousnesses are trapped in the video game, and that kind of...
I'm trapped in the game!
I'm a little sick of it, personally.
Ever since that episode of Gravity Falls, you can't do Trapped in the Game anymore. When Seuss accidentally locks himself inside an arcade cabinet.
I thought you were about to say when Seuss dates a visual novel girl.
That one was pretty good, too.
That one was also very good. But yeah, it's... like, I think you can make them work, but I feel like you have to have something else. It can't just be an AI is trapped in the game, oh god. Like, and credit to Greenio, I believe that they are trying to do interesting things with it as well. There are other storylines that are kind of going on that I'm not going to get too deep into. But I feel like just at the outset I was kind of turned off by the AI are real and they're being tortured, because Ben Drowned has done it.
Especially, like, the drowning. So much drowning.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to be like, oh, you can't make any media unless it's 100% wholly original. Like, obviously not, but you have to give me a reason to care aside from this, you know?
Also, if your twist is that character drowned, like... come on, what are you doing? Come up with, make them, like, trapped in an avalanche or something, then you could use the cold crevasse. Just come on, you can't do drowning for another, like, 10 years.
Yeah, you can't do drowning until it's become a retro reference.
A retrance. Yeah,
plus if you did avalanche, then you could use it as a cold open.
Mm-hmm. You could book a flight tonight. Yeah, I also wanted to bring up Mario Nova 64, who apparently some of their work was stolen for the beta archive, so
that sucks. Oopsie.
But Mario Nova 64, for one thing, they helped showcase and highlight some of the stuff from the 2020 leak. They also are working on an actual recreation of the Space World beta, from what I understand. It's hard to tell how ironic it is or not, because Mario Nova has also done a lot of ROM hacking, and it made a few sort of videos along the lines of the personalization stuff. The most notable one was the internal Plexus video. The premise was more along the lines of the Wario apparition for some reason, but there was that one, and then there's sort of a few others, that started with Breaking the Barrier, where Mario, the person playing the game, tricks the, like, trap door in front of the first Bowser level and goes past it. And then there's another trapdoor past it.
Yeah, which is a great comedy bit.
And then they get trapped in, like, this sort of underground basement area that reuses some assets and otherwise uses some new assets. Has a lot of really funny signs from the Koopa, like, from Bowser's army building the basement.
Yeah.
There's some fun bits of, like, there's a mirror that doesn't have anything on any Mario on the other side. It's just the level being reflected. And there's a sign that says, "The incredible vanishing mirror. Show your surroundings with you nowhere to be seen."
Yeah.
Which is a bit about how you can't do reflections in video games. They just have another model.
Yeah. I think what really, like, makes this that sort of not series, but, like, series of videos to me is that They are not trying to be creepy. There is the occasional one that is.
Right, except for the internal Plexus. Yeah. That one's sort of like standalone.
Yeah, the internal Plexus stands alone, but I really like the series we're talking about, because it's more just sort of like exploration into It is stylized like somebody who found this secret in this video game that's 20 years old and is just sort of showcasing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that style. Like, I love that take on it rather than sort of just the creepy take.
Yeah, there's a little bit of, like, eeriness and creepiness. Like, the switch button that says, like, this will activate all cap switches and then some.
Yeah.
And there's, like... There's something weird about when he goes through the mirror with the vanish cap, and then, like, there's something on the other side of the door, and it's Luigi. And yeah. It's kind of weird. But I love this the, like, few videos in the series, because it's very much not, like, meant to be... It's not trying hard, in the sense that it's not, like, trying too hard to be creepy or weird or eerie.
Yeah.
It kind of lets the atmosphere speak for itself. It has a little fun with the concept.
I specifically like it because it feels like any of the creepiness is creepiness that would be in Mario 64 otherwise.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, you know, you walk into a room and there's a giant hallway that's blurred out by fog. It's just like, it's the creepiness of... It's the creepiness of Mario 64 baseline. You know, it's that weird sort of, like, uncanny feel.
Yeah, like, why is the castle so empty still? What's with this city that's kind of here being flooded?
Yeah.
I love... So, it's hard for me to find Mario 64 creepy stuff creepy, because this is the game where the plumber goes, Yahoo!
Yeah.
Wahoo! It's the Bing Bing Wahoo game. It has such a legacy nowadays of being a funny game that it's hard to take it seriously as this weird game. Whereas, I want to shout out a ROM hack for Mario 64 called Elise, which is a horror ROM hack made for a recent competition by Simple Flip. Shout outs to Simple Flips. The competition was made by Simple Flips, not the ROM hack. But because that one replaces Mario with, like, another character, it's a lot easier for me to get enveloped in the atmosphere.
Yeah. Because
I'm not just listening to Mario go, ooh, ha, wah-ha. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
He isn't jumping forward and then sliding his butt across a floor and going, yahoo!
Yeah. Whereas, like, so the first one, the internal plexus, it has that, like, Wario apparition moment, but it doesn't feel tense to me. Whereas, like, the later ones, because they are a little more fun, I'm like, okay, I can get behind this.
Yeah. Yeah, the Wario apparition, I said we were going to talk about it, and I feel like the long and short of it is, it was, somebody used that, like, Wario will show you fun clip and, like, face model, and just kind of, you like, it became a trope in these styles of creepypasta, and, like, it's, I don't know why it caught on.
Yeah.
Like, because I don't know why it caught on in a serious manner, because it's inherently kind of goofy,
mm-hmm.
to me, at least. Like, it's inherently a little bit goofy that you walk, that you, you know, turn around, and then there's a giant disembodied Wario head. Like, there's a reason that hyper-realistic Mario became kind of a punchline and shorthand for bad creepypasta.
So, I think it reminds me of the Backrooms monster.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I feel like a lot of internet creepypastas, people want them to have monsters, even if it wouldn't make sense for there to be one, or even if it doesn't really need one to be creepy. So, like, the Backrooms, for me, the idea of being trapped in this infinite indoor space that kind of just looks dim is creepy enough that it doesn't need a thing to chase you.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop other people from putting in a thing to chase you. And I don't like that, but I guess enough people do.
Yeah.
I think this is the same thing where it's like people wanted a monster to chase you in the Mario game, but they couldn't do Bowser because you kill Bowser in the game. So they had to get weird with it. You know, it's, I don't want to say they're wrong for wanting it, because I feel like that's too much of, like, calling other people cringe,
yeah.
Yucking yums, in yeah. a way. But, like,
I'm willing to accept let people enjoy things yeah. as the rebuttal to this.
And
but
I will accept let kids enjoy things, especially
yeah.
when it's something like a Wario monster and not, like, a fucked up monster.
Yeah. But what if it was a fucked up Wario monster?
Oh, well, that's, I have to really reconsider my positions then. I think just as from our perspective, as not being the youngins, it's a little cringe.
It's not even necessarily, I wouldn't call it cringe. It's more just kind of like, to me, it's more just like, I mean, really, is that the payoff?
It's wacky.
Yeah, it's wacky. It's inherently a little wacky, and there's nothing wrong with horror being a little wacky, but like,
I mean, it's camp.
Yeah.
Kind of. It's kind of campy.
It's campy.
It's campy. All right.
Campy, much like we're currently doing around this campfire.
Yes, yes.
We here at the 12 o'clock a.m.
Nope, you messed it up again.
Oh, shit. Oh, God.
0 o'clock a.m. club.
Right, 0 o'clock a.m. club.
Yeah, this will be on the test. So, we've talked a bit about sort of the video side of things, the creepypasta side of things, but we haven't really talked much about the game side of things.
Yes.
Which was supposed to be our main topic. We're already an hour in, so this will be a little short. But there was a Mario 64 ROM hack that got kind of popular on YouTube and Twitch with streamers and whatnot, called Super Mario B3313, or Super Mario Internal Plexus. And if that name sounds familiar, it's because it was from 10 minutes ago.
just a little long time
joke for you long time fans.
Yeah, yeah.
I got you.
Thanks, Billiam.
Yeah. So this was a ROM hack that sort of incorporated a lot of the ideas and visuals and motifs of mainly Greenio in Mario Nova's videos over Mario 64. Where, like, looking at Greenio series, there's, like, the red, white, and blue textures on the bricks in the castle. That's used. A lot of the, like, yellow wallpaper walls from Mario Nova 64's videos are used. In general, it's sort of like, the idea is if the personalization AI went out of control and made it too big.
Yeah.
That's how I would put it. It's like, so, you know, assuming there is an AI that can shape the game and make more of the game, you know, what if it just kept going and kept making more? It doesn't make sense. It's a little creepy at times. It's not creepy at times. There's like legitimate levels mixed in with the not levels. Some levels are way too big, as if the AI didn't know how to make a good level.
Yeah.
Some levels are just the right size and they're completely playable.
So this I believe gets into what I'm going to call a new segment here, which is NetSurfer versus.
Yeah.
Because we actually have pretty different opinions about this.
Let me add a few more things though.
Oh yeah.
So there's a few important facts to note about B3313. A, it's huge. There's more stars than the original game. B, what I'm going to call a LSD-like, named after LSD Dream Emulator.
Nothing else.
Yeah. So, where, like, there are things that don't seem like doors that are doors. There are things that will teleport you elsewhere when you touch them or visit them. The navigation is intentionally vague and dreamlike to lead you more to wandering. There's not like a huge consistency with the layers of the castle. It's not like the only version of the original castle lobby is sequestered away throughout like 10 pathways, 10 layers, very House of Leaves in that regard. And the important thing to note if you play the game or watch the game is that the main lobby that you start in has three variations that it randomly cycles through. And so, like, these variations have differences you can try to track in terms of, like, what paintings are accessible. But overall, yeah, there's, like, three variations on the castle.
Yeah, it's it's an interesting sort of, like, so, okay, I'll leave the positive aspects to you, because I don't hate this mod, but I did come away with it with a much more negative opinion.
You only watched it, too.
I played
through it a little bit on stream. I even made a little bit of a map. It's not complete, though. The actual map people have put together is really funny to look at.
Yeah, here's the thing. I will put up a Galen is a cynic warning here, which is not 100% true all of the time, but specifically for this, even unlike the earlier criticisms I had, this one definitely gets it more into just, this is Galen's taste.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I look at, you know, I can tell when a series that I like is bad and a series that I don't like is good. And this kind of, to me, feels like something that is actually really good that I just personally don't like.
Yeah, whereas this is pretty far up my alley.
Yeah.
You're at the street and I'm hanging out with all these alley cats.
Well, see, I'm here in the corner. I'm here in the spotlight.
Sure.
Losing my lives in Mario.
Oh, wah, wah, wah.
Trying to keep the camera centered.
But I don't know if I can do it. Said too much. Yeah. So, here's the first topic for this debate.
Yes.
My stance is that the vagueness of the navigation, including the fact that there are three different versions of the lobby, it means that you aren't supposed to navigate it. In that, I think that's fun.
Yeah.
I think it's fun being lost at times.
So, my first pillar here is going to be, I think that the levels are too big.
I agree with that, actually. That's not even a versus. That's just like, yeah, they're too big.
My core criticism here is kind of, it feels like it has its finger in a lot of pies, and it at some point it runs out of fingers to put in pies.
Nice.
And so it starts having to use toes in pies.
Mm.
I know.
Not nice.
Unnice. It feels like it's an intersection between personalization, style creepypastas, beta content, and an original, like, thing. An original, like...
LSD-like.
And to me, it kind of, like, it's a case where if you go too far in one direction, it leaves me asking questions about the others. So it's like, okay, this level, you know, Freeze Easy Peak, that's a level in Banjo, isn't
yes.
it? I said that as a joke earlier, and then I was like, hang on a second. The level with the snowman, for example.
Snowman's Land.
For example, that level is much bigger than it, like, needs to be, and, like, the snowman is kind of just a bunch of polygons. It's like, you know, and so it leaves me this question of, like, okay, the snowman being a bunch of polygons tells me this is supposed to be a beta level. This is way too big for the Nintendo 64 to ever handle.
Yeah.
So is it going for kind of, like, this uncanny, like, halfway between beta and the final product thing? Well, I don't know. A lot of this feels too intact for me to really call this, you know, that being the intention to me.
Yeah. That's the thing is, I mean, for starters, it has more stars than the original game.
Yeah.
For me, I enjoy the prospect that there is, like, way more than it seems. Like, the fact that the level is big is kind of annoying to navigate. But on the other hand, the fact that it's, like, a level that's within another level, and it's, like, really big, and that it looks, like, half-finished in a way, I think that fits with the personalization theme of, like, the AI just kind of extending its limb a little further, just as far as it can reach, and then just kind of ending there because it can't go any further.
Yeah.
And it kind of fits the beta because there is the uncanniness of, like, this is content that was cut from the original game that is somehow in it now.
Yeah.
It does have, like, an area that references the Funhouse, for example. The notorious Funhouse level. And so it definitely, like, draws inspiration from beta content, but at the same time, I don't think it's necessarily meant to be a what if this were the beta. I don't think that's necessarily a, like, part of the triangle it's trying to associate with as much as you are getting the impression of.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily your fault nor its fault.
Yeah.
It's just that Mario 64 content often looks like it's about beta Mario 64, as we have discussed.
Yeah.
And so when something has similar aesthetics, it's hard to divorce that from the other content and other works.
I think the problem really was that when I was looking into it, I was looking into it from the perspective of someone who has, like, seen and or gotten the summary of a lot of these, like, Mario creepypasta, Mario personalization creepypastas. And so when I saw it, that was the immediate lens I was trying to look through it through. And it just, like, it isn't really supposed to be a creepypasta at the core.
Yeah.
And a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not, the point is not that you are going to walk through a door and, like, you know, it's like, I'm an AI who's in existential torture. I swear to God, Greedio, I'm not trying to be mean. But the problem is that that was the headspace I was in when looking into this and when watching you play it. And so that was what my mind was looking for. And so through that lens, it fails. But it's also sort of like, you know, it's like looking at an Oscar-nominated movie and being like, where's all the japes? Yeah. Where's the humor?
Yeah.
You
or,
know?
Or looking at a summer blockbuster action movie and being like, where's the serious parts?
Yeah. Yeah, and so...
Sorry, that was... I just want to... I know I just said it, but I need to reiterate that. It's like looking at a summer action blockbuster movie and saying, where's the serious parts? Where's the drama?
I mean, that's fair.
That's a subtweet. Anyway, so, yeah.
Is that a subtweet of your co-host?
No.
Okay, good.
It's of the internet.
Oh, right. Okay, fair enough.
So, yeah. I, on the other hand... Let me preface this that saying that La Mulana 2 is in my top 10 favorite games and La Mulana 1's in my top 15. I view this game kind of similar. So the reason I got a map out and I drew a map, I like games where taking notes is encouraged or rewarded. That's why I play a lot of puzzle games in games like La Mulana where like taking notes can be helpful, or like The Witness, you know. These are games where sometimes you need note paper, and I like that. And so I had played a little bit of B3313 when it first was released and gotten lost a lot and found that a little frustrating. But I think drawing a map and treating it as like an expedition made it a lot more enjoyable for me.
Yeah.
The puzzle of navigating was enjoyable. However, there were tons of people who did enjoy just getting lost sometimes. I think in particular there was a Vinny stream where he played it. And, like, he found an area where, like, a ghost Mario floated towards you and made you die.
Yeah.
And he spent the next hour and a half trying to get back to that room. And the fact that something like that exists, where, like, it's so far down in the number of layers that you don't know how to get there again, but you know that it just happened. That's sort of the thesis of... you know, the whole personalization movement.
Yeah.
Is what if you kept going and there were layer upon layer and at the bottom there is something really creepy in that it was just like unexpected. But the creepiness is that you can't get there again. It's too hidden away.
Yeah. I will fully admit that I feel like the moment I were to play this, I would feel like a mess. I would be like, yeah, I was a hypocrite.
Yeah.
Like,
you can't 100% it, by the way.
Yeah.
You can, but you're not meant to, and it's a fool's errand, and it's also not as fun.
I believe that there's 140 stars baseline, and there are five question mark stars, essentially. Like, the max you can get is 145, but five of them are specifically RNG. You're not supposed to find all 145 stars.
Yeah. I know that that is a contentious thing to say nowadays. Like, a game where you're not supposed to get everything in the game, what gives?
Yeah.
But I don't mind that.
Yeah. Yeah, especially from a fan work.
Yeah.
Like, a fan work that's building off of the legacy of a lot of, you know, a lot of sort of Mario 64 is creepy, what if we did more with that concept things.
It's sort of ironic, but also fitting, that the whole creepypasta movement is around the idea of a personalization AI that expands the game more and adds more to it. That's what the fans have been doing.
Yeah.
Is they have been personalizing the game by adding their own spin to it. Based on, you know, what they like, what they know, what they wanted out of the game, and expanding it further. And in a way, B3313 is just some fans who went too far and made too much to add on to the game.
Yeah. And, like, you know what? That's kind of awesome, honestly.
It was a metaphor the whole time.
Ooh. I think the only last thing that I specifically want to say, personalization, is... hello, any content creators out there. If you are doing any video that has to do with personalization, I'm not saying that you have to throw up kayfabe at every moment, but, like, throw up a little kayfabe. Like, throw up a little, just a little thing of, like, by the way, this is all just fun stories on the internet. You know, I have seen...
Oh, so break kayfabe a little.
Yeah, break kayfabe a little is, I guess, what I mean. Like, I have seen there's a creator who did a deep dive into Super Mario 64 Icebergs that was good, but like I remember one specific moment where he was like, you know, the personalization AI probably does not exist, but I know that, you know, there are people who believe that it does exist, and I'm just kind of like, who? Give me names.
There are people who believe the Earth is flat.
There are people who believe that if you use strength on the truck in Pokemon, you can get Mew. They're wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want a repeat of losing track of things, you know? We are at a post-childhood rumors state with the old games, and, like, on one hand, we've lost something there, but at the very least with, like, the old games, I think it's fair to just be like, here's the extent of all of these games, and anything past this is fan-made works.
See, on the other hand, I think the people who lament the loss of the childhood playground rumor just aren't hanging around kids, which is probably a good thing, but... But, like, you think of stuff like Herobrine, and that is essentially the same as pushing the truck to get Mew.
I mean, yeah.
Like, they still exist. You're just not paying attention to them.
Yeah.
And I think, in a way, a lot of the, like, childhood playground secrets are very similar to the stuff people call cringy in that, like, what if the game had this thing in it that is so popular nowadays?
Yeah.
After all, what if you saw your friend and you were like, did you know that in Freddy game, there's a ghost Freddy that appears randomly and crashes the game? Like, that's the same thing as being like, you know, did you know that if you fight Red with the exact same team that Ash has in the anime, you get to fight Super Red, who has a rare Pokemon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a little thing that irks me of just like, every time I hear somebody talk about it, I'm just sort of like, just one line of, like, these are fun fiction series.
Yeah.
Please.
Shoutouts to Liam Triforce, whose video on Mario 64 kind of inspired this episode for me. And shoutouts to Vinny, who recommended that video. And shoutouts to Simple Flips.
Yeah, shoutouts to Simple Flips. Shoutouts to Panin Koic as well. If you know Panin only through the 0.5A press Roch for Rolling Rocks video, that's valid, but, like, holy crap, there's so much more than that.
Yeah.
Look up Uncommentated Panin. Oh my god.
Yeah. Shoutouts to the A Presses saved on TTC recently, by the way.
God, yeah.
It's phenomenal. And shoutouts to us, I guess.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at NetSurferPro. We mainly post on Twitter because Facebook's kind of annoying.
Yeah.
We have, you know, updates on our new episodes. We have teasers on upcoming episodes. By this point, we will have had a teaser post for all of our Spooky Month episodes. Try to figure out what they all are. It's a fun little thing. You know one of them now.
Yeah, you know one of them now. And I'm going to step in front of you, actually. I know that you usually
Sorry. It's very sudden.
Yeah, I know.
It'd be nice if you would say, like, ask me first before you step in front of me.
You know, that's a good point. I'm sorry. I really, you know, could I take your thunder real quick?
Just, yeah,
you know,
sure.
Awesome.
Thunder.
Thunder. I'm going to do my socials first, because you can find me on Twitter and on TikTok at Galen Wilson. That's at GALANWLS0N, where I post my hot takes and sometimes fun videos. And of course, you can also find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube. But if you want to find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire, I will be streaming one of our topics at some point in the near future, definitely within the week that this comes out. I will be streaming. You can get a hot sneak peek as to what that topic is going to be, because it will be a fun time. Also, you can probably guess it's a video game right now.
Yeah.
I'll be streaming a book series.
Ooh, nice. Audiobooks live. You can follow me on Twitter at Twackaroo. That's TWAKAROO. Where I tweet about how I'm doing. I like things, I reply to things. It's a Twitter account, what do you expect? But I also tweet when I go live on my Twitch stream at twitch.tv/twack, where I play roguelites, competitive games. I started playing through Pikmin recently, and I'll be finishing that. And I might stream B3313 some more, or I might stream one of the other things we're covering this month.
This month.
So I guess that spoils another of the things in that it might be a video game or a book.
Famously, those are the two things that you can stream on Twitch.
Just reading. And I guess that's it for this story.
How do we think about this meeting of the 0 o'clock a.m. Club?
Well, we somehow managed to drive away everybody that wanted to join, so it's still just us two.
I'm still here. Hyper-realistic Mario.
Okay, fine. It's just us three. Hopefully next meeting has some more interesting people to join, because it's a bit of a sausage fest, if you ask me.
Which is to say that we're going to grind up hyper-realistic Mario and turn him into sausage. Haha! The spooky twist!
Germa reference.